San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios in Kearney Mesa with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast to Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a philanthropist. He's a marathon runner, accomplished. And he is a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. All-around good guy. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing brilliantly.
That is great.
We've got a great show tonight. We've got some big news to announce, too.
We have a mega guest, but let's announce our news and get right into the show.
Yeah, okay, first of all, you might be noticing that you're listening to us on Saturday night instead of Sunday night.
That's correct.
So we've moved from Sundays at 7 to Saturdays at 7 p.m. But beyond that, in about 2 or 3 weeks, it'll either be on June 22nd or June 29th. We're going to be broadcasting live from where, Mr. Vecchio?
From the landmark La Valencia Hotel in beautiful downtown La Jolla. And that is just going to be a real thrill. When I arrived in San Diego in 1977 and used to go to brunch there, I never would dream, in my wildest dreams, thought I'd be doing a radio show from the La Valencia Hotel sometime in my life. But lo and behold, that is what is going to happen. So
going to be fun, but yes. let's get straight to business.
We have a really significant guest this evening. He is in the promos I said he is a local luminary, a visionary, and a philanthropist, an all-around just a city father. I said that in the promo as well, and that's absolutely true on all accounts. And he is the reputable and notable Malin Burnham. Malin, good evening. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm fine, Joe. I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, our absolute pleasure. Our absolute pleasure. You are obviously a native of San Diego, but your family has extensive roots here. So when did your family first arrive in San Diego?
My parents came about the same time, 1905, 1906. My mother came with her family from Salt Lake City, and my dad came from Jackson, Minnesota. So we've been here a long time.
Wow. How many siblings in your family?
I had an older brother, deceased now, and no sisters. Mm-hmm. Now our family really consists of my four children, mm-hmm. Two grandchildren.
Outstanding.
We see a lot of each other. Three of my four children live here in San Diego County. The other one lives up in Mendocino, California. Mm-hmm. But we get together as family quite often.
Great. And here's a question you may not get too often, but I'm very curious about your name, Malin. I don't think I know any other Malins on the planet. So where did your parents derive your name from?
My father's side of the family was English, and he had a great aunt in England whose first name was Malin. Today, my spelling, which Malin can be spelled in different ways, but the common name of mine seems to be with Scandinavian women. So I don't know what that means in my background, but that's about the only connection. But it's interesting. I get several letters a year from people that don't know me, and they think it's a mistake, Malin, so they put an R in it. Dear Marlon.
Well, you still have a fantastic head of hair, of which I'm very jealous, but we'll leave that for another discussion.
All right.
You must have good genes in that regard. So, but anyway, so you were born, what, around
1937.
27, wow. So what was San Diego like growing up? Where'd you grow up? What part of San Diego?
I was born in Mercy Hospital and grew up into my teenage years in Loma Portal, just a block up from NTC.
Huh.
And then over the years, I've just kept in increments moving further out to the south, mm-hmm. where I now live within about 300 feet of the Navy fence in the very end of Point Loma, facing the harbor.
So you went to school in the Point Loma area too?
Yes, Loma Portal all the way through K-12 in the city schools. Loma Portal Elementary School, and then I was in the last class that went all 6 years through Point Loma High School before the junior high of Dana High was open.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you choose Stanford in industrial engineering? Because that was your major, correct?
Well, that was a little bit of, I suppose, serendipity. With Lowell North as my crew, we just had won the world championship in the star class in Stamford, Connecticut in the summer of 45. And you guys are too young to remember, but we did transcontinental travel by train in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway across the country somewhere in coming home, in mid-August, the train stopped, and we didn't know why, and it turned out it was VJ Day. And so in those days, there wasn't too much service from L.A. Union Station to San Diego, so my folks arranged to come and pick us up at the station in L.A., that is Lowell and I, and the first thing my dad said, you're going to Stanford. And I said, wait a minute, Pop. I said, I was planning on going in the service and get drafted and so on and so forth. And he said, well, look at the war's over and they're going to shut that down somehow and so on and so forth. So anyway, I was really a walk-on at Stanford. They didn't have many men during the war years because of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no difficulty in getting on. I'm sure today, since they have about 15 to 1 applicants to each position, that the odds would have been that I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah. How did, but when you won ahead, that world championship in the International Star class, weren't you the youngest until this day, the youngest skipper ever to accomplish that?
Yes, I still am.
You were what, 17, 18? How old?
17.
17, wow.
17. And it's the Star class is one of the most, well, I'm prejudiced, but it's the most impressive prejudice class. A prestigious class in the world as far as the skills are concerned, and the best sailors, the majority of best sailors come out of the star class ultimately.
So growing up in Point Loma, were you on the water at a very, very young age?
Yes. My mother used to take my brother and I down to the bay. She loved to swim and suntan, and so we were on the bayside of Point Loma. Mm-hmm. In the summertime, and we saw these little junior boats called starlets. They were a small star boat, 16 feet, two-person. And they were the junior class boat, the only junior class boat in those days. So some of those kids would come by the beach and say, hey, would you like to go for a ride? And sure, we always jumped aboard. Mm-hmm. So my mother saw that my brother and I might take to sailing. So my folks had never been on a boat. And anyway, they joined the San Diego Yacht Club, and we were in the junior program. I was in that program from age 10 to 15.
Okay.
It made a big difference in my life.
And, of course, there was no Mission Bay at the time, right? When was that?
Well, there were swamplands over there. There were no active bay over there at the time, so it was all San Diego Harbor.
It must be mind-boggling to grow up and see this town grow up. When you were a youngster, I mean, the top population had to be probably, what, 100,000?
No, way less than that. When I, in the 30s, I would say that the population was 35,000
for the
people.
Whole county, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I got here in 1969. It was still a small town in 1969.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot that's going on. So then you got involved in the America's Cup at some point, right, Malin?
Yes. I was asked by Lowell North, who was designated skipper of one of the entries in the defense trials, and in the 1977 America's Cup. And he asked Lowell, while he was skipper, wanted me to be the helmsman, because Lowell was the type that was looking all over the boat and thinking ahead and out over the horizon with where the wind shifts are and all that. And that was his best strengths, and so I was the actual helmsman in that. We ended up in a great summer back in Newport, Rhode Island. There were three on the defense side entries, and it turned out that Ted Turner beat us, and we actually beat Ted Hood that year, who had won the America's Cup 3 years prior. So we were in the hunt, but didn't quite get over Ted Turner.
Huh. But we have to take a little pause right here, but we'll talk about our San Diego experience at America's Cup when we come back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life right after this. Hang on.
All right.
We're back with the notable Malin Burnham and Richard Musu and myself to talk more about sailing and other achievements. But Malin, we talked at the break a little bit about the Transpac race. You said you did that twice. What was that experience like?
Transpac race in those days was about a 10 to 12 day race, 2,200 miles.
California to Hawaii, right?
California, Los Angeles Harbor to Honolulu.
Non-stop, right?
Non-stop. And it's mostly what we call downhill. In other words, mm-hmm. it's mostly the wind abeam or behind you so that you're sailing with spinnakers, and it's a relatively easy race for a long-distance ocean race. They speed it up, though, in recent times. It's a 5 or 6 day race with the big fast boats that we have today.
But you did that with no radios, right?
We did not have any radios in those years, and there were no escort vessels, power boats that go along with us. Now they have power boats that come along and monitor the race, and the racers are now required, of course, with the great radio facilities that we have today, overseas and otherwise. Anyway, the rules of ocean racing today require at least once, if not twice a day, that each entry has to report their mm-hmm. position, report any problems, mm-hmm. And so the official race committee can keep track of what's going on.
But then there were some fatalities you were telling us about. These races are pretty, can be treacherous, right? Tell us about the Bermuda experience a little bit.
Well, the Bermuda experience is Newport, Rhode Island to Bermuda. That race, the wind can come from any direction. So you get it from headwinds and tailwinds and everything in between. There's another component of that race, and that's the Gulf Stream, the famous Gulf Stream of warm water that comes out of the Caribbean mm-hmm. and runs northward along the coast of the eastern seaboard and then crosses between going east between Bermuda and say New York and Connecticut and Maine, and so you cross that, and you want to cross it in the most favorable position for a sailor. Otherwise, you get swept away from your landmark. So that's an extra challenge. That race has never been a fatality that I'm aware of. But as far as some of the other races, I didn't have one of those experiences in 1979. I was crewing on a 44-foot boat that Dennis Conner was skippering, and it was a fastnet race which starts on the Isle of Wight, which is just off the southern shore of Great Britain, mm-hmm. England, and goes west to the tip, the southern tip of Ireland, to a lighthouse on a barely offshore rock called Fastnet Rock. And you turn that rock and then come back to Plymouth, 600-mile race. In this race, again, we didn't have good radio forecast of weather in those days, at least in Europe. And it was unpredicted, but a storm came up almost overnight. And midway through the race, we were getting 70-knot winds and 30-foot waves. Oh. And it turned out of the 300 boats, just over 300 boats in the race, 32 of them sunk and 15 people drowned. Oh. And we didn't know that until we got back to the finish line. But we knew it was rough. Fortunately, we only had some minor scrapes injury-wise on our boat, and everything held together.
Yeah.
So I know in 1987 you played a leading role in getting the America's Cup here into America's finest city. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
It was a great experience. It was one of a kind experience. Dennis, sailing for the New York Yacht Club in 1983, lost the cup. And the New York Yacht Club had held that cup for something like 132 years mm-hmm. and successfully defended it. So the joke was in those days that whichever skipper ever lost the cup for the New York Yacht Club, his head would appear in a trophy case in lieu of the cup, since the cup is gone. So Dennis, this was in September of 83. Along about January of 84, Dennis decided that he was ready to pick himself up and go back and try to get the cup back for America. So he and I teamed up, and we thought there'd be a lot of interest in San Diego, so we decided to hold a press conference on the lawn at the San Diego Yacht Club. and because there'd be a lot of interest. So we held a press conference, and six people showed up. So we had, in other words, truly, we started with zero.
You had some selling to do, as they say.
We had a lot of selling. We had no money. We had no boats. We had no team. We had no backers. We had really no interest.
But it seemed like a good idea at the time. So.
Well, yes. And this was one of those good ideas that, of course, had a very happy ending.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go fast forward to the end. Dennis wrote a book called Comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about what I just started to describe was the starting point. But it takes you all the way through what we did for 3 years, to win that cup. And I've been asked several times after we lost it in 1995, when I went to New Zealand, I've been asked at that time by several people, well, Malin, do you have any interest in going back and trying to get the cup again? And I said, you know, it's one of those things that it was such a perfect story,
yeah,
the way it happened with us, that we started with zero and we ended up with 100%.
Mm-hmm.
That if I went back, any of us went back to try to get the cup again, I couldn't exceed that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I might equal it,
right?
But sort of been there, done that, and I've got a good memory.
Be like Michael Jordan, win the ring and go, and that's that. So.
Right.
Now, Roy Disney did a pretty cool film on the Trans-Pac. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Did you know him at all? Or
yes, I've known Roy over the years from sailing,
mm-hmm,
and he was a marvelous person in that regard. And what he really wanted to do was advance the sport to those that normally wouldn't have an opportunity to be out on racing boats. So-called yachts in those days. And so he always had brought youngsters that may have never been on a boat before and trained them and took them on many of his long-distance races.
You made a film about that, too. I think it was called Morning Light. I saw the premiere of that film at the film festival.
It is. That's great. Great.
Richard, you had a question?
So sailing is great, but this is also a business show. So tell us a little bit about your business career, because it's been very storied in the real estate business, the insurance business, and so on. As an engineer major at Stanford, what got you interested in maybe something that wasn't pure engineering?
Well, let me back up a little bit before then and say, Richard, that in high school, my best courses were math and physics. So that sort of, when I went to Stanford, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but the easy thing, not the easy thing, but the most connecting thing was to take an engineering curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I entered engineering as a freshman. By the time I entered into my junior year, I had to declare which engineering discipline. Was it mechanical? Was it fluid? Was it aeronautical? Was it whatever? And I chose industrial engineering because at that time I was pretty certain that San Diego was going to be my life and sailing was going to be part of it. And I wanted to live here. And so my dad had tried to push me into finish out a real engineering school course like mechanical and maybe going on. And he was very proud of me, but he said, go on and you can be the CEO of Westinghouse or General Electric someday. And I said, you know, I don't think I want to do that. Not that I could have, but so anyway, I took an industrial engineering course, which gives you a smattering of several of the disciplines in engineering, plus a little bit of legal, a little bit of accounting, a little bit of business principles and those types of things. So if I had to do it all over again, I'd do the same thing, even though I knew I was going to go in the real estate world. Mm-hmm. So a week after graduating with my diploma from Stanford Engineering, I'm in the real estate world.
Great thing that you had a vision, though, of the engineering. You know, we had Dr. Jacobs on here a few months ago, and his high school he wanted to go to engineering. His high school counselor told him, forget about it. There's no future in it.
Famous last words.
Right. He was actually in the Cornell School of, I don't know if you knew, he was in the hospitality program for two years.
Yes.
Interesting story. But it's always great to have your direction early on in life, I think.
Well, it is. And again, the serendipity and love. Certainly can play a role, but so far everything's worked out fine in my life.
Excellent. Well, listen, we have to take a little another break. We'll have more serendipity when we come back after news, sports, and weather. So hang on, everybody. More with Malin Burnham after this. All right, we are back with Richard Musio, myself, and Malin Burnham. And over to Richard to thank all of our terrific sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. We couldn't do it without you. Our major sponsor, UBS, Mr. Michael Quaranta and Drew Freitas. Drew Freitas, by the way, was a crew member on Dennis Conner's boat in 1987. He then had to grow up and go out and do something, you know, that's legitimate for a living. So... But gentlemen, thank you. We couldn't do it without you. Best Business Bank in San Diego, Regents Bank, our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic, Don Epic and Paul Polito, CPA up in Vista, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, a great CFO company, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow, Rich Gaines, best estate planning attorney here in town with Family Legacy Legal. And last but not least, and I owe a debt of gratitude too, because I stole some of his material for the presentation I made this past Thursday at La Jolla Estate Gift Trust and Probate Division, Carl Sheeler, best business valuation resource I've ever met, Business Valuations Limited. So thank you to all. We couldn't do it without you, and we are very appreciative. And Joe, how can our listeners find out more about our great sponsors?
Well, if you just dial up your computer or smartphone or any other device of that nature, go to iymoney.com, click on sponsors, all of their professional information is there, background information, contact information, and they're all terrific. And Richard's been working with all of them for many years, so they're handpicked and excellent in their field.
In some cases, for more than 20 years, and that tells you that Richard is not as young as he used to be.
But anyway, back with Malin. How about Drew Freitas? I don't know if you knew Drew at all, but he was on that crew with Dennis.
Malin's like, who?
Yeah. Several dozen people I know, but those guys worked hard. I used to live at the Oakwood Apartments, and I think they were living there, but they you'd see these guys just, they leave early in the morning, come back late at night, yep. And these guys were like rugby players. Yeah. They're not little people.
No. It's all engaging. I mean, you got... Dennis came up with a winning slogan that for teamwork, and that is the team has to make a commitment to the commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
But people think it's all physical, but it's not. It's so cerebral, too.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, the sport of sailing, if you compare it with other sports, and I did this recently at a talk, is... most people think of sports to begin with as all physical.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sports also have a mental component. All sports do. You have to think.
Mm-hmm.
You have to prepare. But I wouldn't be surprised that sailing has the biggest component, percentage-wise, of mental as opposed to physical, because the playing field for sailing is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about that, and the only other sport maybe that comes close would be snow skiing. But other than that, so if the playing field is moving all the time and being adjusted, mm-hmm. then you have to adjust your sails. You have to adjust the way you sail. So that mental component, you're constantly thinking of wind change and this direction. And
of course, you have to worry about your competitors, right?
Absolutely. And, yeah. So there's a lot of strategy in that regard. So it's an interesting component.
Excellent.
A question about your real estate career. I know I'm a proud alumni of the University of San Diego. You, of course, co-endowed the Burnham Moores. It's called the Center for Real Estate at the University of San Diego. Could you talk briefly about your real estate career? I guess you could say your timing was perfect in terms of when you found yourself situated in San Diego, having matriculated at Stanford, graduated, and then coming back here just post-World War II. Times to be in San Diego because there was an absolute boom.
Yes.
That happened.
Timing was excellent. There's no question about that. And that's where luck and serendipity come into one's life from time to time. My father owned the business when I was growing up, small business. He always had the door open for me to come into the business if I wanted to, but he didn't push, he didn't pull. He wanted me to do my own thing, and that's why he suggested that I might go on to big business someday, but I nixed that idea. When I got into the business after college, I think I was employee number 11.
Mm-hmm.
It was a commercial real estate, insurance, and mortgage loan company. And we grew up from there. About 10 years later, I guess, I was the president of the company, and my dad retired 2 or 3 years after that. And so it's been a great career. for me and for San Diego. The reason that it was so good for San Diego, and especially in those times, as you referred to, Richard, is that it was boom years in that people were coming to California. Mm-hmm. People wanted to come where living standards were higher, where the sun shines more than the rain falls.
Where you don't have to shovel snow for 2 hours a day to just get to the office.
So I learned early on that in the biggest problem in the real estate industry is when we overbuild. Mm-hmm. Overbuild apartments or overbuild office building. Mm-hmm. And generally, we don't overbuild everything at once, but one sector. Mm-hmm. And I learned early on it's a lot better to be in to take that risk in San Diego than in, say, Boston, mm-hmm. because we had a growth rate that was mm-hmm. so much higher than anybody else. So we overcome our mistakes mm-hmm. In that regard easier, quicker mm-hmm. Than elsewhere. So that just satisfied me that it was a great business to be in, and I worked hard to build it up over the years.
Yeah, a lot of people sure love to retire here. We know that for a fact. So
absolutely.
But, well, Malum, you sit on many boards. You've chaired 9 major nonprofits. You've co-founded 14 organizations. Just off the top of your head, which of those would you, I don't want to, in terms of ranking, but of those you make you really proud? Would you like to mention a few? Or?
Well, sure, Joe. There's one that I guess I've got my greatest satisfaction out of. I mean, I'm proud of all the things that I've done, and even some mistakes that I've made.
Mm-hmm. That's how you learn.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
The current Sanford Burnham Institute for Medical Research is the one organization that I've had the most satisfaction at over my life, and this story goes back some 37 years when. Dr. and Mrs. Bill Fishman came out from Tufts University, knowing nobody in the West Coast, settled in La Jolla, brought their government grant. He was a oncologist cancer researcher. Mm-hmm. And they rented a 2-bedroom apartment and put the lab in one bedroom. Year 6, I was approached by 2 friends of mine on the board of then the La Jolla Cancer Research Foundation, and they wanted me to come on the board. And I said, well, wait a minute, why me? I don't have any knowledge of cancer. It's never been in our family. It's not an emotional situation. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, the reason we want you, because you're a central San Diego type person, and everybody connected now with the La Jolla Cancer Research Foundation is lives in La Jolla. Our banker, our accountant, our board members, our everybody. And we need to broaden the base, and that's why we're coming to you. I said, well, give me some information. Let me have a tour. And so at the end of a little study, I was very intrigued and I was very impressed with something that I didn't actually have a vocabulary word for another 10 or 12 years. But in those years, scientific research was done surrounded by a screen so that your next door neighbor scientist couldn't see what you were doing because the scientists were afraid somebody's going to steal their secrets. And the Fishmans, La Jolla Cancer Research Foundation, was exactly the opposite. They promoted family and partners and networking and all of that.
Collaboration.
Which, mm-hmm. Yes, and mm-hmm. that was the word, collaboration, Joe, mm-hmm. that I saw and liked, but I couldn't pronounce it. It wasn't
on your radar at
right.
the time.
So today, collaboration is really one of the finest things in the DNA of all San Diego. We are in more than just medical research. We are one of the most collaborative areas that I know of, mm-hmm. and certainly in the research field. So I would say now that's called, of course, in the interim, it was the Burnham Institute, and now Sanford Burnham Institute, and we're growing all the time, made a lot of discoveries. Our scientists have been part of discoveries with their own drugs as well as other people's drugs as being a participant, where we are satisfied that we save, the work that we've done in the past has saved, today saves at least 1 million lives a year. Hmm. And that's quite an accomplishment.
And speaking of which, there was collaboration between your institution, SOC, and Scripps on some projects, mm-hmm. right, which is really thinking out of the box.
Yes, it is and was, and I should say, when California passed a $3 billion bond issue about 7 or 8 years ago to spend all in stem cell research, we in San Diego, the then Burnham Institute, Salk Research, Scripps Research, and University of California, San Diego Research all came together to form a consortium, which has never been done before. And it may never be done again because we are so close. We're within bicycle reach of each other. Mm-hmm. We're a collaborative organization. So we all came together to do collective research on stem cell and not just to go after part of that $3 billion bond issue, but from all other sources. So we've now brought in our fifth institute, the La Jolla Institute for Allergy and Immunization, and they're fine, fine outfit. So we're doing some, I think our scientists are going to make some breakthroughs. It's not going to happen overnight, but again, I'm very proud of being able to be part of a cooperation of that type and magnitude.
That is great. But we have to take a little break here. We'll see what else we can discover with Malin Burnham right after this break, so stay tuned. All right, we're back in the home stretch with City Father Malin Burnham and Richard Musio and myself, and welcome back. Let's talk about the future a little bit, Malin. Can we talk about this innovation center or museum or concept at all, or what do you think?
Sure. About 11 or 12 years ago, an associate of mine, Brent Jacobs, and I started thinking about, hey, San Diego deserves to have a innovation museum similar to what Silicon Valley did in downtown San Jose. It's called the San Jose Tech Center, which we went up and visited. And it displays, and what we want to display here in an active sense, are most, as many as we possibly can get in, but all of the inventions that were done in San Diego, developed in San Diego, built in San Diego, perhaps starting with Charles Lindbergh's airplane. Most people don't
the year you were
remember.
Born? The year you were born.
Yes, 1927, the one he flew across the Atlantic, all the way up to perhaps the latest chip of Qualcomm. And we are the third largest innovation cluster in the country, behind Silicon Valley and Boston, which really means the third largest in the world. So we need to display those things and show what the capabilities of San Diego. Help make our citizens proud where they live and who their neighbors
inspiring
are.
Inspiring at that same time.
Very inspiring.
Yeah.
I especially mean, for school kids who can come in and say, hey, maybe I can do something like that someday.
And I mean, it's not kosher to name a product, but like WD-40 was discovered
here.
A worldwide product like that, and there's a lot of cool things. So
a lot of cool
Dr.
things.
Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
Did you know him well at all? Or?
Not well, but I followed him, and you know, people don't think of necessarily of him as an innovator, but he had a new way of educating people.
Sure,
that's innovation.
Remember that one challenge? I think they gave him a limited set of words to write a book, and he did it.
Yeah.
I forget which book it was.
No, but we've had a lot of talent in San Diego, and the future has never been brighter.
Absolutely.
So, man, I'm going to give you a quote. Gabriel Zaid, a Mexican poet, said that he said that wealth is above all an accumulation of possibilities. I think that statement basically represents what you've accomplished with your tremendous track record, both philanthropically as well as in business in San Diego. But with regard to that comment and your legacy, if you could come back 100 years from now and look back on your life, I mean, what would you want your legacy to be or look like, or what would be the thing that you're most proud of?
Gee, Richard, I really haven't thought about that because I kind of just plow along every day with...
You're going to be here 100 years from now, right?
Well,
because of the Innovation Center.
let me tell you this. 5 years ago, at age on my 80th birthday, in front of 300 of our famous friends, best friends, at the end of the evening with the microphone, I promised my wife another 25 years. So I have 20 to go, and I plan to fulfill them. I'm very fortunate in that my whole basis is the genes given to me by my mother and father, and that's where it all starts. Mm-hmm. And I try to pay respect to that because I do maintain a rather healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm not straight and narrow by any means, but in any event, 27 years ago, 1986, I decided I wanted to convert out of the business world and get into the nonprofit world and repop myself. And I've never been happier. I have no business interests anymore. I got investments, but no business interests. I'm not on any business boards. And the other thing that you might be surprised is that I have never owned a cell phone, and I do not know how to turn on a computer.
Hmm.
Now, I am, every 5 years or so, I take out a yellow pad and say, okay, what have you accomplished or helped accomplish in the last 5 years? And every 5 years, I'm more productive. And let me tell you why. I'm an unusual guy, but I have an office. I have an assistant. And yes, I get a lot of emails, and I send a lot of emails, but I don't do it.
Right.
And the reason is I don't want to be tethered to yesterday or today. My 95% of my mind is thinking about tomorrow, a year from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, what can I help do? And most people don't think that way. So I'm just an unusual duck, I guess, in that regard, and that's what drives me. So I'd love to come back in not 100 years, but maybe 20 years after I skip out and see what has been accomplished. Because so many things that we do and many things, projects that I've done, take 10, 15, 20 or more years to make happen.
Absolutely. And what do you see, how do you feel about the future of philanthropy in this country? Because I'm a real optimist. I see people not just contributing money, but contributing their time, their talent, their energy, their networks, their collaborative spirit. Do you view that similarly, or what's your vision of the future?
Oh, yes. No, I think philanthropy is definitely on the move. There are more organizations being started. There are more people getting involved. And we're learning the philanthropy. When I first thought about philanthropy, I thought my image was a kind of a short, fat, bald-headed man who wrote checks. And it's a lot different than that. It's money isn't the only scorekeeping device here. It's what you accomplish. It's what people volunteer their time for and help their neighbors. So I've printed a little card 4 or 5 years ago, which is very simple. It has three words on it. And it says, community before self. And if you look on the Union Tribune masthead on Section B, the local section, you'll see those words, community before self.
I was just going to mention that. It's in my daily newspaper.
And so those are the kind of things that I'm really pleased to be able to do. And another thing that I'm lucky on, I was close to Saul Price in his career when he started FedMart and then Price Club and then Costco and so on and so forth. But he taught me several things as a mentor. He was several years older than I. But one of the things he taught me was that he could come up in the same space that the rest of us would come up with 10 ideas. In that same space, he'd come up with maybe 100 ideas. Now, his batting average was no better than anybody else's. But 10% of 100 is a lot more than 10% of 10. I learned that early on. So I'm a idea guy. I try. They call me a visionary, but that's only because I'm thinking ahead. Trying to figure out. And so I come up with a lot of ideas, but you know, I have never ever accomplished anything by myself. I've always been part of a team, and that's just what I think our future is, including philanthropy that we started this little part of our conversation with. Philanthropy is getting more and more important, and more people involved in it. And they understand that we have to help each other.
We're seeing it in
well
the food,
said.
You know, people are seeking better food options. And I see, look at the farmer's market, Little Italy, how that's blown up. I mean,
yes.
People are more concerned.
Without health, Joe, there is no wealth.
Yes, absolutely.
Good point.
So I saw Meatless Mondays now in the school section.
Yeah,
so,
that was interesting.
In the schools, so that's great to see. So let's see, man. We've got 1 minute left. Is there anything that you'd like to say just to wrap up here as we conclude this wonderful hour we've had with you?
Well, I don't have any booming points on mine. There are several projects out there, but I really appreciate you fellas thinking of what's happening in our community, that where you can spread the word, and that's really what this is. This isn't about mail. This broadcast is not about Malin Burnham. It's about what we can do in San Diego. And again, community before self, and why, and that's one of the reasons. Part of our DNA is innovation and the future. So let's continue. Would be my best advice.
I'm 100% in agreement with that.
Man, thank you so much.
Very much appreciated, sir. It's been a distinct pleasure.
Yeah. I wish there were more like you in our town. A lot of people who reach a certain level of success, they'll just go off and do something to indulge themselves and not really give back. But you've given back way more than almost anybody in this county. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And it's my pleasure. And thanks for having these programs.
That's Richard great.
And Joe.
Thank you.
We'll have you again at the La Valencia sometime, I hope. So
okay.
Anyway, good night. Richard, thank you so much. Have a great week. And thank you to Justin Hart, our sound engineer on the board. And thank you, Craig Blanke, our account executive, and Dave Sniff, our programming genius. You have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week.